Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock and heavy metal. Two national radio shows, best-selling books, and host of That Metal Show on VH1 Classic. Now, Eddie's bringing his honest, no-nonsense approach and passion to the world of podcasting. You'll hear commentary, analysis, celebrity guests, and who knows what else. PodcastOne.com presents The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, new every Thursday at PodcastOne.com and via iTunes. Thank you guys so much for listening, downloading, streaming. You know the deal by now. Good to be here with you guys for another week. And a cool interview coming your way that I think you guys are going to really enjoy, and we'll get into that in just a second. Let's see. Right off the top here, I'll dive into this just for a couple minutes here because I got a lot of people looking for my reaction to it. And I understand that here on the podcast, we have people that maybe don't hear my radio show every week or shows. And again, because I do a lot of different things, and I don't know in what ways I connect with people. And I don't say this at all from a cocky standpoint, but sometimes people will come up to me or email me or tweet me and say something like, "Hey man, we really love your show." And I appreciate that beyond belief, but I have to sometimes say, "Wait a minute, which show?" Because some people hear my FM syndicated show. Some people hear my satellite radio show on Mondays on Sirius XM. Some people mean this podcast. Some people mean my TV show, That Metal Show. Some people out there, the freaks, and I love you, and I mean that in the most flattering of way, the true hardcore fans listen and watch all of it and read my site and all that, and I truly am grateful for that. I say freak jokingly, you know what I'm saying? I need freaks like that. You guys keep the whole thing going, so thank you. So I never know, you know, who hears or sees what from what I say. And if you're not aware of this, I have pretty well known, I've railed on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for probably 20 years now. But I also have spent a good amount of time, probably not as much and not as viciously, but a pretty good amount of time hammering the totally clueless people that make the decisions when it comes to the Grammys. Because ever since the Grammys gave Jethro Tull the Metal Award over Metallica, everybody remembers that, right? I mean, it was the greatest outrage. Everybody just laughed. It was the silliest, dumbest thing. Nobody could figure it out in a million years. And you said, oh, well, you would think with all that sort of backlash and all that outrage 20 plus years ago, they probably got it together since then, right? Guess what, you guys? They haven't at all. It's as pathetically lost and clueless as it's ever been. Much like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, when it comes to rock and metal, the Grammys are utterly, embarrassingly clueless. Now, here's the difference between the two, as I say this a lot. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's blatant disrespect to hard rock and metal artists, I feel, is intentional. The people that vote and control their committees there, they know full well who they're snubbing. And in their elitist minds, they have a reason for why they're snubbing so many iconic rock and metal artists, even the ones they begrudgingly put in, like Kiss and Rush and Alice Cooper, after keeping them on the sidelines for 20 years. To me, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame knows full well what they're doing. They just hate the genre and have no respect for it. The Grammys, to me, are a little different. They want to do the right thing. They'd like to do the right thing. They just don't have a clue what they're doing. They have nobody, clearly nobody internally, that has any real voice to control rock and metal music. Because the process for nominating and who they pick as nominees every year is so random and so laughably ridiculous, you wouldn't know where to begin. I said this on Twitter last weekend when the Grammys ran, and I truly mean it. The nomination process is kind of like, envision like a giant carnival wheel in a conference room. And you have this group of very out of touch old record executives sitting at this giant table. This is how I see it and envision it in my mind. And the guy spins the wheel. They say, well, they get all the submissions, all the people that want to get a Grammy, right, in the rock and metal category. They put all these cards on the table, and they say, well, we kind of recognize that name. We heard of that guy. Put that on the wheel. Yeah. Okay, so we heard of Beck. Wasn't Beck big like 20 years ago? Yeah, so put that on the wheel. We certainly heard of Foo Fighters. Put that on the wheel. Tenacious D, we heard of that. That's like a comedy. That's like the guy in a movie, right? Put that on the wheel. Motorhead, isn't this Lemmy guy a big deal? Put him on the wheel. Doesn't matter what song it's for. Put him on the wheel. Anthrax, we heard it. We put them on the wheel every year. Put them on the wheel again. And then they take this big wheel and they just spin it. And whatever it lands on, yeah, let's just go with that. Who cares? That'll work. It's only metal and rock. Who cares about that? Now, I'm not saying that's what they do, but I'm saying that's damn well what it feels like to me. It is so random, so clueless, so without logic. And as a result, the Grammys have zero impact on these artists' career when they win them. Zero. It used to be that there was a big spike in sales, there was some level of prestige, there was a spike in concert attendance for the artists that won. It was a big deal. Now it is utterly meaningless in terms of the ripple effect it has on the business for these artists. Now, I'm sure to their parents it's a big deal, and maybe to them, yeah, they got the statue on the fireplace. Look, I won a Grammy. Let's be honest. As long as the Grammys keep giving Grammys to Motorhead for a cover of a Metallica song, keep nominating Anthrax for a cover of a Dio song, keep giving Grammys to Jethro Tull over Metallica, it means nothing. And I don't mean to say that to disparage people that have won them. Of course, they're going to be happy and say the right things, and why shouldn't they? But it's everybody just chuckles inside because it's a joke. It is an out-and-out joke. They are lost over there. So, what happens this year? You got the metal categories. The nominees are Mastodon, Slipknot, Motorhead, finally for one of their own songs. Anthrax, again, for a cover. Do the Grammys not know that Anthrax has made their own music for decades? This is like the third time in a row they've nominated Anthrax for a cover of somebody else's music. And last but certainly not least, in the number five position, Tenacious D. Yes, the joke band, the goof band by actor Jack Black and Kyle Gass. Now, again, any Tenacious D fans out there, relax. This is not an attack on that band. but let's call it what it is. Nobody in a million years is regarding Tenacious D as any sort of great, legendary, Grammy-worthy metal band. Give me a break. It is what it is. It's a fun, goof, novelty thing by an actor and his buddy. Stop it if you think that that is the next Iron Maiden. Okay? Just like the people that start up about Steel Panther. And I'm sorry, I'm going to say it. I have no ill will against that band. But it is a spoof. It is a goof. They will be the first to tell you if you really talk to them. It's not real. It's a goof. That's why their records chart on the comedy charts. Get it? Comedy. So don't tell me Steel Panther is the next Metallica. It's ridiculous, people that don't see the goof in this stuff. This is no vendetta against either band. I don't know Tenacious D. I know the Steel Panther guys. I like them very much. Nice people, talented, but it's a goof. So anyway, here we are. And I can't believe Steel Panther wasn't in the metal category this year. I think they might have been in the comedy category. I don't know. And that maybe that's worthy of a Grammy for real. But the wheel must have not landed on them with the morons that make these decisions for the Grammys. So speaking of this year, you've got Slipknot, who's had a number one record, whether you like them or not, another number one album in headlining arenas. Mastodon, who's made a really good record and is certainly an emerging band that you could say could be one of the next great metal bands at some point. Again, whether you take your personal taste out of this, I'm just talking facts if you know anything about this music. Motorhead, who are icons and has made some solid, great new music lately, again in the category. And Anthrax, who, again, a great band, but a cover of Neon Knights. I mean, it's a cover. To me, the Grammy, you should not be able to even be eligible for a Grammy if you've done somebody else's music. Why would you ever be nominated and eligible for a Grammy for a cover? It's somebody else's song. You didn't even write it. How is it great artistic achievement? It's insanity. Okay, so Anthrax is fourth. And the fifth person in the metal category this year, Tenacious D. Oh, yeah, and it's better yet, for a cover of a Dio song. So two of the five nominees from this year's greatest metal performances, one Anthrax and two Tenacious D, both are from the same record, the Dio tribute record, This Is Your Life. Now, I couldn't be happier that Dio and this record gets some attention because it's a great record, including Tenacious D's recording on it, which is a fun, interesting take, okay? And Anthrax's cover, The Last in Line, and Metallica's cover of the Rainbow Medley, all the great stuff on the record. It's phenomenal. One of the best tribute records, and for a great cause to help the Dio Cancer Fund. But I got to take that out of it. Tenacious D is not the Grammy-winning metal performance of the year. But guess what? To the Grammys it is, because they gave them the Grammy this year. So, take out all the great metal moments of 2014, all the great releases, all the great music, all the great stuff that you love and have heard. Throw that all to the side, because according to the most prestigious organization in recorded music, the Grammys, they are telling you, ladies and gentlemen, that the greatest metal performance of 2014 is Tenacious D doing the last in line? I mean, you couldn't make it up. Don't tell me for a minute that Jack Black and his partner Kyle, inside they got to be saying, how is this happening? They got to be saying, are you kidding me? Of course they're going to take it and smile, but it's like this, the cat that ate the canary or whatever the expression is. Now, of course, it's not televised. God forbid they televise the Metal Grammy. But, I mean, they got to be laughing inside. They got to think it's the funniest joke in history. Their silly little thing, Tenacious D, just won the best Metal Grammy of 2014. You couldn't make it up. And as a result, you can never take the Grammys seriously. For over 20 years, their heads have been up their asses without a clue about nominating and electing winners when it comes to metal and rock, for that matter. Come on, Beck was the greatest rock moment of 2014. Come on. Come on, you guys. Come on. And unfortunately, it'll never change because nobody sees the problem in it. Nobody knows any better. Like I said, the metal one's not even televised. So they just, another 20 years will go by until they wake up and put a committee in there specifically to deal with rock and metal who knows, has an ounce of a clue about what's real and what's not. All you guys who tweeted me, emailed me, tweets at Eddie Trunk, emails through EddieTrunk.com, Facebook posts, whatever, who wanted my take and wanted my rant, there you go. My blood pressure thanks you. On a great note, AC/DC opening the Grammys with two songs kicked ass. That was awesome. That was cool to see. Chris Slade is obviously going to be the drummer in AC/DC now, and I thought it worked well. AC/DC with one new song and Highway to Hell as well. Although I got to admit, it's a little goofy to see a bunch of guys in suits wearing little light-up devil horns dancing around to AC/DC when you know they have no clue of the song and no clue what they're playing. Did you catch those shots of the suits in the audience with like the devil? Ugh. God, was that just so not rock. So not legitimate. But whatever. It was great to see AC/DC. And listen, I DVR'd the Grammys. I watched AC/DC. I scrolled through it. The other cool thing, Nuno Betancourt from Extreme, who still plays with Rihanna, he was up there playing with Rihanna right next to Paul McCartney. What a year Nuno's having already. Just did a bunch of shows with Steven Tyler, plays with Rihanna, working with Paul McCartney, and still doing his band Extreme. Guy's a super talent and can adapt and morph into anything needed. And he is, I mean, I texted him. I was really happy for him to have such an incredible opportunity like that to play on the Grammys with McCartney. So that was it for your rock and metal. You have the outrage of the Metal Grammy, the outrage, and not real outrage because nobody knows any better, but the Rock Grammy. And then you've got AC/DC kicking ass. And then you had, if you were paying attention and looking closely, Nuno Betancourt strumming some guitar next to Paul McCartney. If you're a hard rock fan, that's about the most you have to offer for in the Grammys. And you know what? Those two songs from AC/DC to open the show meant a lot. So as far as the show is concerned, we'll take it. But the process of who wins is a joke and meaningless at this point, thanks to how much they've run this thing into the ground. All right, well, love is in the air. Can't you just feel it? Can't you feel it emanating from me? It's Valentine's Day. I mean, it's here, guys. It's here. You need to get gifts to your loved ones, right? Now, last week I mentioned that I send Valentine's Day gifts to my mother to my aunt, of course, to my wife. Jericho is goofing on me, who we had a little cameo of in the podcast last week, because he's like, you sent a Valentine's Day gift to your aunt? Listen, Valentine's Day, it's not just for the romantic lovey-dovey people in your life, like your wife or your girlfriend. It's for your loved ones. Of course I give my mom some flowers. My aunt, I have an aunt that's like another mother to me. Of course I'll give her something. It's that sort of vibe. You got to come up with the goods. It's different reasons, but you show your appreciation and your love at Valentine's Day to the ones you love. And yeah, you can do that through Amazon too, because they can help with all your gift needs. As you know, Amazon supports this podcast, keeps it free by offering my show a small commission on the products you purchase. So when you go to Amazon to buy anything for Valentine's Day or for anything else that you want to buy, be sure to click on the podcast1.com show page and click on my podcast when you get to podcast1.com, the Eddie Trunk podcast. Then you'll see the Amazon banner. Click through that and then do all your shopping. Won't cost you a penny more, but it does help to offset the cost of this podcast. So again, go to podcast1.com, get to the Eddie Trunk podcast page. You'll find the Amazon banner, my other banners as well for other sponsors. Click through them and then do your shopping. It helps us out. Won't cost you a penny more. Can use my Amazon banner if you're located in Canada or the UK as well. Also, to make it easier for all future purchases, please bookmark my Amazon URL. Thanks for the support, Amazon, and thank you guys for shopping that way. It does help us out greatly, and we do appreciate it. Coming up on the Eddie Trunk podcast, Danny the Count Coker. One of the things I said I wanted to do when I got this podcast going was get into some other stuff, slightly left of center than what I normally do. Danny the Count Coker is a great guy. He owns a great rock club that I go to all the time in Vegas called Vamped with his wife. He owns a tattoo shop. He is incredibly popular right now with a hit TV show called Counting Cars. And he also has a band called Counts 77. And he's a great guy as well. So coming up, a conversation with Danny the Count Coker about his band, his rock club, which at one point was he was partnered with Vince Neil on, and the brand new season of his hit TV show on History Channel, Counting Cars. All of that coming up on this week's episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Thanks for listening, you guys. Coming back with that interview.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, you guys, let me tell you something. Anybody that knows me or has listened to me for any period of time knows that Las Vegas is my favorite city in the world. I love going there. I go there all the time. I try to go at least a couple times a year. There's so much going on at any given time, from great clubs, a great rock scene happening there now, March Madness, of course, during football season, spring break is coming up, NASCAR, I've been to NASCAR races there. It is absolutely phenomenal. I love that city. And with a little help from our friends at Vegas.com, you can save even more money by going to Vegas. I mean, there are phenomenal, phenomenal deals. Listeners have saved real money at Vegas.com with exclusive offers like $84 off at the Bellagio, $56 off at the Luxor, $90 off at Caesars. I mean, these are really great resorts and hotels, and it's just a phenomenal deal. 10% off everything, excluding air and hotel packages, are available as well. So to get the best deal, you got to book through Vegas.com. Everyone at Vegas.com lives in Vegas, works in Vegas, and parties in Vegas. They know the deal. They make sure that you get taken care of the best. So go to Vegas.com. That is the way to go. They got you covered for all your needs to go to my favorite city in the world. Go to Vegas.com right now. Click on the microphone in the top right corner and enter my code Eddie to receive an extra 10% off everything but air, of course. Hotel packages, it's just a phenomenal deal. That's Vegas.com. Click on the microphone and get your bonus savings by using the secret code Eddie. They probably know me by there. I love going to Vegas so much. So that's the deal. Vegas.com. Hit that microphone. Type in Eddie. Book today. It is the party capital. And who knows, maybe I'll see you there because I love Vegas and love Vegas.com.
Dennis Miller and Adam Carolla are now doing a podcast together.
This is going to be a caprice for us.
Already, right? People have to run to the internet to start Googling your inane references.
Two guys who are always pissed off.
Let's go throw a rock at Mr. Johnson's car.
We have a good name there, I think, with P.O.'d cast.
And P.O.'d also spells pod, without the apostrophe.
This isn't testicular cancer.
Right. Save some for the P.O.'d cast with Dennis Miller and Adam Carolla. New episodes every week right here at P.O.'dCastOne.com.
True Car is changing car buying forever. True Car helps car buyers get rid of the fear that they might overpay. Just in the first 6 months of this year, over 275,000 cars were sold by the True Car Certified Dealer Network, and True Car users save an average of $3,221 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, go to TrueCar.com to find out what others paid for the car you want. Then register to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. Third step is simple. Just print out your savings certificate and take it to the True Car Certified Dealer for a better, hassle-free car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. To see how much you can save on the car you want, simply download the True Car mobile app or visit TrueCar.com today. That's TrueCar.com.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Dollar Shave Club, you guys, it's the way to go. I got to tell you, you know how crazy expensive razors can be. I am very guilty of milking too much use out of my own razors because they're so damn expensive and hacking up my face from time to time. It's just a pain. I mean, you got to go to the store. It costs crazy money. I even go to, like, you know, the stores that sell razors in bulk, the discount stores that are out there, and even those are obscenely expensive. There's really no reason to have to go through all that and to jip yourself out of a really great shave. So do what I did and sign up at dollarshaveclub.com and get amazing razors and grooming supplies for just a couple bucks. It's simple. It's smart. It takes like 2 minutes to get going. And you never have to worry about razors again. They come right to your door. You get a free handle. You get the replacement blades. It's all just for a couple bucks. So don't hack your face up. Don't worry about the condition of the blade. Don't sit there and rinse it repeatedly thinking it's going to come back to life. It's not. Believe me, you got to try dollarshaveclub.com. The blades are fantastic. Great close shave. You get the handle for free. You don't have to worry about overpaying at the store. It is the way to go. Upgrade to the smarter way to shave. Get your shave gear where I get mine, dollarshaveclub.com/trunk. Shave time. Shave money. dollarshaveclub.com/trunk. That's dollarshaveclub.com/trunk.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
We're now welcoming an old friend of mine from one of my favorite cities in the world, where I've gone to his place there in Las Vegas and gotten banged up way too many times over the years. It's one of my favorite stops. It's called Vamped, and he and his wife do a great job with it. And, of course, you know him from Counting Cars. Danny the Count Coker, what's happening, my friend?
What is going on, my brother, Mr. Trunk? How you doing, man?
I'm great, man. I wish I was in Vegas. We're getting snow and sleet and a foot of snow this morning. It's crazy here, man.
Bro, I'm really not going to try and rub this in, but like this week we're climbing up into the 70s with the sun and stuff like that. So, you know, I just figured I'd lay that out there for you.
Yeah, thanks. I was emailing with my buddy Paul Davis, who's over at Mandalay Bay this morning, and he said to me, I said the same thing. He said, are you coming out here anytime soon? I said, man, if I could, I'd come right now because I'm snow blowing a foot of snow off of my driveway. But I'm threatening to move there one of these days, Danny.
Brother,
I'm telling
you. Come on. You do know how much fun we would have if you lived out here, man. We would go berserk. We'd probably both be dead in a month, but still, it'd be fun.
That's one of the reasons I'm afraid to move there. I got so many friends there now. I don't know. I'd be dead. I'd be divorced. I don't know what would happen to me if I went out there.
Absolutely. Well, you'd have some fun. I can tell you that.
I know.
And it's true, brother. Every time you come out and you come to Vance, we always have a great time, bro. We always have a great time.
It's such a great club. Every time I have any of my friends that are going to Vegas for anything, you know, it's a little off the strip. So, you know, people sometimes won't leave the strip. They don't have a car or whatever. But I'm like, you got to get a cab. It's worth it. It's just such, you know, over the years, I've been coming to Vegas so much, and it is my favorite city. I just have so much fun there all the time.
Yeah.
And I go there for vacation so much just to blow off steam. And I was guilty of that for a long time, too, you know, just being the tourist guy on the strip. And then finally, once you get off the strip and I got to know a lot of people like yourself that live there, there's this whole other side to it that is so much more of a fun hang and less of that sort of touristy thing with that sort of vibe.
It's the truth. There's an amazing city outside of the city. You think about Vegas, people see it as, you know, a couple of main roads. You know, you got Fremont Street, and then you got the Strip, and that's most people's perception of it. And you know, of course, that's what everybody sees. So you get that. But like you said, man, you get off the Strip for a minute, and you know, I don't pick on it, man. The Strip is phenomenal. There's a lot of amazing places to see there.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, downtown Fremont. I love the downtown area.
Me too. I love going old school every once in a while.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Man. I dig the old school stuff. But you get off the Strip and get out of the downtown, and it's like you're saying, there is a very cool vibe city here. There's a lot of great people here. And, you know, something that we've really been noticing a lot, too, is there's a ton of musicians moving to Vegas. And guys leaving that Sunset Strip Hollywood scene and coming here to Las Vegas. And for us, as far as, like, you know, the club having vamped here, it's been phenomenal, because we get all these musicians that show up and they come to the club, and like yourself, they're like, dude, this is what a rock club is supposed to be. This is what they used to be. This is what it's supposed to be. So we're getting just tons of musicians coming there and hanging out at our place, and it's phenomenal. And the acts that are coming up are great. John Five, he's getting ready to play Friday the 13th here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which is fun. Talk about a cool cat.
An amazing guitar player. Amazing talent all around. Just amazing.
Unbelievable. You're 100% right, man. I saw him. We just did the Vegas Rock Awards out here at the Palms, and John was there, and he played, and it was just, it's just mind blowing, you know. I mean, you see him, of course, with Zombie and this and that, and he's off the chain. But to just see him as just him, it's like, wow, dude, this guy's blow away. He's great, and a very cool person.
Yes, we first started having him on that metal show, and of course, a lot of people had heard of him, but because he was known for being in Marilyn Manson and Rob Zombie, two bands that don't really feature lead guitar playing, nobody knew what that guy was about. And then when they started seeing him shred on our show, I'll tell you, Danny, every time we had him on, the whoever was sitting next to me as the guest on the set would turn to me and say, who the hell is that guy?
Right.
And they'd all want to work with him, and in some cases he ended up working with some of them. But he's a beast and a sweetheart of a guy as well. So
absolutely, that's exactly what happened to me. I mean, I didn't know that he could shred like that. I didn't know. And and when you see it happen, you literally have that jaw drop moment, like, you're kidding me, this guy, he's that good. And he's that cool. So great guy. Looking forward to seeing his solo show, you know, coming up here on Friday 13th. It'll be a blast.
For sure.
Why don't you get out of the snow and come visit?
Oh, man, I'd love to. You know, we're about to start, after a year off, start production on more episodes of that metal show in two weeks. So
that's great news.
Yeah, I'm going to be locked down, though. We're doing them back in New York, so I'm going to be between that and then, you know, various other things. I've got a ton of stuff going on, but unfortunately nothing that's going to bring me there. But I'll tell you this, I'm pretty much locked up through Memorial Day, but I am going to circle some time, because I'm going to be more than ready after Memorial Day to come out there just to do nothing.
Brother, call me. Let me know you're coming.
I will.
I will have you hooked up and dialed in, man.
I will, man.
Absolutely. And I'm congratulations on more of that metal show, dude. It is such an amazing show. You do such a fantastic job on it. The guests that you get on there, it's that show is off the chain. Congrats on more episodes on the
man. Yeah, thanks, man. I appreciate that. We've been going for this will be our 14th run of doing shows. We started back in 08, and it's like the little show that could. We don't do that many. We don't have a lot of resources. We don't have a lot of budget, but somehow, thanks to the viewers that we have and how passionate they are, it keeps chugging along. And you know something about that with your own TV show, Counting Cars. What's going on with that?
Brother, we're blessed, man. We're wrapping up shooting season 5 right now, and it hits the air February 24 on History. So season 5 is getting ready to happen here in a matter of a couple weeks off, two, three weeks off now. And we're contracted through season 8. So, you know, thankfully we're busy as can be, man, building cars, building bikes, and staying constantly busy. I mean, as you know, when you're in production, it's day and night. And for us, chasing down cars and buying them and then refurbing them and then selling them or feeding my addiction to keep certain things. It's an around the clock thing, man. And the show's just been, such a blessing for business, man. Before the TV show, there were 9 of us here at Counts Customs, and now because of the TV show, there's like 48 of us here.
Yeah, I'm sure it just blew up, man.
Yeah, we're going like gangbusters. But the season 5 is I'm proud of this season. There's a lot of really strong builds on it, and I tell you something really cool too. You'll dig this. A cat named Del Bryant, who is president, CEO, the big kahuna of BMI Records, brought me, and you'll see this in season 5, brought me his father's 72 Blazer. Now, his dad, who was BMI, before the good Lord called him home, he was BMI. His dad bought this truck new. It's been in the family forever, and so we did a whole refurb on this truck for him and some tributes to his dad on there too as well, musically. And so it's pretty cool because, you know, the connection with BMI and then being able to do his father's truck, that was a really cool thing.
Yeah, that is really cool. Danny, how did the TV show come to you, man? How did that happen for you?
You know, I was the Harrisons over on the Pawn Star show. Rick Harrison and the Harrison family, I've known them for years. I've been, you know, riding motorcycles since I was a kid. So one of Rick's brothers, one of his other brothers that you don't see on the show, he and I, we used to ride all the time. We were riding Harleys all the time on weekends and during the weekend, of course, causing all kinds of trouble. But as time went on, we grew up a little bit and started becoming, you know, more business oriented. But one day, Rick Harrison from Pawn Stars gave me a call and asked me if I would be interested in doing some mechanical work on vehicles that they take in, you know, at the pawn shop. So absolutely. So they started bringing me a couple cars down here and stuff, and I'd do the cars for them and send them back, and everything was good. And then one day Rick asked me, would I mind shooting a scene for Pawn Stars at my shop regarding a vehicle that we were going to, you know, refurb for him. I'm like, yeah, man, that'd be a lot of fun. So they came down and we shot a scene together, and of course the footage all goes back to New York because that's where the production company's at. And in about 3 days, I got a phone call from a very cool gentleman in New York, a producer there out of New York, who called me up, who was working on the show, and he's like, look, I'm sitting in the edit bay right now and I'm looking at this footage of you guys, you know, at your shop. I'd like to come out and talk to you. And I'm like, okay, what do you want to talk about? And he's like, I just want to come out and meet you. So a gentleman named Joel Patterson, great guy, flew out here to Vegas, spent a few days with me here at the shop, and basically said, dude, I want to put together a pilot on a show about you and your business. And I'm like, okay, I'm open to that. And they put the pilot together. History of the Network, thankfully, fell in love with it, and the rest is history, as they say. And so, you know, they bought 13 shows just to try, And when the show came on the air, it literally set records for the network as far as a new program coming out. And here we are now on season five, man. And it's just been phenomenal. And it's a blast doing the show, but it's also an amazing marketing tool for things. It's marketing that I could never afford for other things like my club or the tattoo shop or the band or whatever else that I'm involved in. We get snippets of that on the show, and it's helped all of my businesses, which is, you know, a real blessing.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, and that is one of the beautiful things about having a platform like that. And I can speak to that on my own, because having done that metal show over the last few years,
yeah,
and having had that be successful, not only in America, but outside of the U.S., it's given me the opportunity to, on the weekend, I go out and I did it at Vamped with my co-host,
yep,
you know, go out and do a live stage show or do some live Stump the Trunk in clubs and
yep,
make a little extra money, but more importantly, get out and actually press the flesh with the people that support what you do. And that's
yep,
really cool. And people that I can say firsthand, people that go to Vegas, if you go to Vamped and you're home and you're around, there's a good chance they're going to see you hanging out, because you're one of those guys that loves to hang with everybody.
Absolutely.
And you do it all the time in the club. And that really means a lot to people. So it's very cool.
It's true, dude. And you know, it's like, you know, when I built that club, I built it because I didn't build it with the intentions of going, I'm going to build a rock club and I'm going to make money, because, you know, that just doesn't happen. It's something you build because you're passionate about it. And I'm very passionate about the music and very passionate about that scene. So building the club has just been phenomenal. It's the place I want to hang out at that I don't think Vegas had, that I think it was missing here. And so, like you were saying, when I'm in town, I am literally at that club probably almost every weekend when I'm in town. And because we get a heck of a lot of great talent.
You do.
I mean, we've got coming up, man. We got Michael Schenker coming up.
We
got Crocus coming up. We got Y&T coming up. We got Winger coming up. I told you, got John 5 coming up. These are just some of the things that are coming into that club, where you've got the most intimate atmosphere, yet you've got a stage and a PA like you would find in a big house.
Yep.
And I love to hang out there on the weekends. And you're right, man. Shaking hands with people and meeting people from all over the world are coming to that club now and hanging out.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's just a blast. Plus the musicians that come there and hang out, you know, are you know, they come in and they're just having a good time.
Yep. I want to talk about your band in a second, but one more thing on the club, because
yeah,
you know, I love it so much, and I have so much fun there all the time.
That means a lot to me, because you know what you're talking about. And so for somebody like you to say you dig the club, that means a lot. So thank you.
Well, and I don't say it just because you're a friend and you know, and your wife is a friend and I like going there. I say it because I truly mean it, because I am a guy that has spent my whole life in the music industry, and I'm in venues all the time, whether just as a fan or working or what have you, and whether it be a club or a theater or what have you, it's so great when you go into a place that does have it together, that does have a good stage, that does have a great sound system, versus when you go into some of these other places, because it just makes the experience so much better. My primary reason for ever going to any venue is to hear and see the music properly. And
yeah,
unfortunately, there's a lot of venues out there that you go out and half the sound system is shot, or
yeah,
the lighting sucks, or they don't take care of the people, or they're jerks or what have you. And
yep,
so it's really important to praise the ones that do it right. And there are a lot of good ones out there, and
yeah,
and yours is certainly in there. The first time I went to that that venue, to
yeah,
your place, though,
yeah,
it was branded as Feel Goods. It was
correct,
Vince Neil's branded.
Yeah.
But you still owned it with Vince then?
Well, actually, I owned it 100%. It was one of the types of things where, again, this was pre-television show. I built that club before I had the TV show. So and at the time, Vince and I were doing some different, you know, business ventures together. So I built the club. I owned it solely 100%. You know, from the get go. And basically Vince was kind of like with Motley, he's the front man. And so he was kind of just fronting it. So I had a name on the place to get some attention there. And, you know, throughout a short period of time, it turned out that we were not the best of business partners. So we, you know, we just went our separate directions. He's doing his thing, and I'm doing mine. And I rebranded it as Vamped to kind of reflect my flavor, my style, who I am. And then thankfully this TV show came along and the marketing tool happened. And so it's always been mine. It was just the type of thing where it was a business arrangement to just draw some attention.
What year did you open it?
It has been 5 years now, so it's got to be 2000.
No.
I'm talking about 2010.
So you opened it as Feel Goods?
Yes.
In 2010, 5 years ago?
5 years ago, yep.
Because, man, the first time I went there is legend with my friends. And I don't know if you were there.
I was, bro. I was there.
Vince was having his birthday party there?
Yeah.
I never forget this, and it is legend with my friends. I was about to take off from New Jersey for my annual vacation with my buddies to Vegas.
Yeah.
And I got a text from, I think it was Dana Strum.
Yeah.
And Dana said to me, bro, you're coming to Vegas. Vince is having a party at this club, Feel Goods. You got to come. I was like, well, I'm going to land probably. It's going to be like 1 o'clock Vegas time by the time I get, no, come over. And I walked over and I walked in the place for the first time. And I remember I saw Vince and it was one of those moments in Vince's life where he was being sober.
Uh-huh.
And he had a cake and everything, and I walked in, and people knew who I was, and I walked in the place. I felt like I knew everybody in the place, and I was on an empty stomach, just got off a six-hour flight, and everyone handed me shots and a drink. And when I tell you, I was borderline carried out of that place that night.
I was one of the guys that helped carry you.
I remember I got poured into a cab. I was with two of my friends.
That's right.
And I'm like, no, we're going out still, man. Oh, we're fucking good. We're going to do it. And everyone's literally, it's like something out of like The Hangover, pushing me into a taxi.
Oh, yeah.
No, it's time for you to go to sleep, Ed.
It was a classic night. I remember that night really well because, you know, for me, it was like I was thrilled that Eddie Trunk was in my club.
Oh,
I was
like, nice
this,
here,
this is the coolest thing in the world. Eddie Trunk is partying in my club. And so I remember that night very well, and I remember the good times that were had that night.
Well, the funny thing was is that Vince was like, how many times I've been with Vince and he's tipping some back and we're having a party and having fun.
Yep.
And I thought I'd at least be on the same plane as Vince. I remember Vince like, now I got to go home and go to bed, dude. Have some cake if you want. And he split. I'm like, wait a minute, it's your party. What the hell happened? Yep. And then I just took over the I think all the drinks he didn't drink had.
Yeah, he was on a real roll of really taking care of himself during that period of time. I remember he was very much working out and eating healthy and just really taking care of himself during that time. I was really, really proud of him during that era. But anyways.
Anyway, let's talk about this band now.
Yeah,
Count 77.
Yeah,
how did this come about?
Count 77 came about really organically and honest. And again, it's something that happened before the TV show. Because a lot of folks have a perception of, you know, okay, he's got a big TV show now, so now he's gonna try and, you know, and do a band. But what, you know, people don't know about me is I grew up in three aspects of my life, and it was motorcycles, cars, and music. My father being a musician, I grew up in music, and I used to sing be very active in music at a young age. Years went by, I kind of drifted away from it, but I always, as far as myself personally performing, but always loved the music. So built the club. Then the club, I was doing Wednesday night jam nights, and my buddy John Zito had a little trio, just, you know, the John Zito band, and he would host Wednesday night jam night. And so all kinds of musicians and people, you know, from all over town, they show up on Wednesday nights, and he calls people up and just kind of have some fun. So he had found out that not only was I a music enthusiast, but I actually, you know, I actually sing. And so he called me up one night, and I got up and jammed with him for a period of time, and we had a ball. So about, you know, once every maybe two or three weeks, I'd go down there on a Wednesday night and start jamming with him. Well, on one particular Wednesday, the five original members of the band, which we are all still together now, we've added one since, but which was now is John Zito, on guitar, Paul DeCibio on drums, who has a background with Blue Man and all this stuff. He's a fantastic player. Barry Barnes on bass, who again has a huge history in music. Stoney Curtis on lead guitar, and myself singing. We were all on the stage at the same time. And that combination of guys have never been on the stage together, and it just felt great. And we stayed up there, and we played and played and played. We had a ball. So afterwards, we got together, and we're like, you know, we should do, you guys, if you guys are down for it. Let's get together outside the place. Let's rehearse a few numbers, and we come back, you know, for the jam and see if people dig it. Well, people started really digging it. So the rehearsals actually then evolved into opening up for bands that were coming to play at the club. And so the band just kind of grew very organically there. And after a while, man, we started then, you know, headlining our own thing. And the whole object of the band being Count 77 is we consider ourselves a 70s hard rock band, kind of in a time capsule and brought, you know, to present day. So, cause we're all about the same age. We're all grew up loving the same stuff. And so together as a unit, we're having a blast. So it truly is a band of brothers. It truly is a blast, and we did it because we love it, and there was no ulterior motive. Like, you know, I got a TV show now, guys. Let's try and put a band together and see if we can't capitalize on that. This was again before the TV show ever happened. The band is about 3.5 years old now, and you know, the TV show has only been on for I think 2 years or something like that. Two and a half years now, maybe longer, 2.5 to 3 years. But anyways, the band started first, so. Then after a period of time, you know, of course you know Mike Varney,
sure.
Who is just, you know, phenomenal. That guy right there, talk about a genius. Varney has he's got a history with Stoney Curtis, my lead guitar player, and Stoney was doing a whole lot of blues music, but Stoney really shreds and has evolved into quite the 70s hard rocker. Well, Varney came to one of our shows. And at Vamp, as a matter of fact, and he was hanging out, and after the show, he said, you know what, I want to do a record with this band. And we're like, man, it would be an honor. So we worked with Varney, and in 2014, April 2014, we released our first original CD, self-titled Count 77. It's got 11 originals. And two covers, and the two covers are Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo, but we got Rick Derringer to play lead guitar on it, and then the other cover is Snortin' Whiskey, and we got Pat Travers to play lead guitar on that.
That's so cool. You got the guys who actually did the songs to
Absolutely.
Jam with you on their own songs. That
Absolutely.
Is awesome.
So that was cool. You know, they're kind of like our bonus tracks, but they're with the real guys. But the rest of the tracks are all original songs, all written by, you know, us and the band, and all produced and put together by Mike Varney. I've got a recording studio here in Vegas. Again, loving music. I've done a full blown recording studio here, and we did the record there, and it's been going off the chain. You know, Blues Rock Magazine put it in top 20 records of 2014. We've gotten rave reviews from so many different online magazines and so many different, you know, print magazines, and the band has now been touring, which this is a total challenge for me because, you know, we're shooting Counting Cars Monday through Friday. But last year we had 22 on the road weekends.
Wow.
Out of the year. And so it's like, you know, I'll shoot all week, get on a plane on a Friday evening and fly somewhere, and we're playing, you know, gigs in cities all over the country. And thankfully now we're hitting some pretty sizable venues like Hard Rocks, have us booked. We've sold out a few Hard Rocks. We've got more Hard Rocks to play in our future. We're doing, Erie, Pennsylvania. Erie, Pennsylvania was mind blowing. We had, we went for the Roar on the Shore. It's a huge motorcycle rally event, and it's a magnificent event. If anybody's ever in that area, it's so worth going to the Roar on the Shore in Erie. we went there to play, and you know they closed down the streets. They set up the huge stage and everything. We played to 25,000 people. It was the most amazing thing. The promoter was beside himself. But the band is doing so well, and Varney just got together with us and says it's time to do a second record. So here, probably end of February, beginning of March, we're going back in the studio. We've been writing new material, and we're going to hit a second record. But it's all a very 70s hard rock vibe. Like our influences, if you listen to the record, you'll hear influences of Montrose. You'll hear influences of Kiss. You'll hear things like, you know, Rare Earth influences as well.
Little Aerosmith vibe at times.
Absolutely. A lot
of
Aerosmith.
All the good stuff, man.
All of that.
All the good stuff.
Great hard rock 70s stuff.
Yeah.
We're bringing that back. So when you come to a Count 77 show, because we really are a show band. We're an on-stage show band. You're going to get our originals, and people are loving them because of that vibe. But then we're going to hit you with a lot of the big songs of the 70s. We're going to hit you with that as well. So it's a blast. I mean, I have not had this much fun doing anything in a long time. It feeds my soul. You know, I lost my father in 2008, and when I'm playing, when I'm out there on the stage, it makes me feel close to him because of the music, and so it really feeds my soul. The band is phenomenal. Now I told you we added a sixth member, and that happened during the recording of the first record because we wanted to add some strong backup vocals, and we wanted to add some B3 to this as well. And so we've Mike Varney brought in Tommy Paris from Britney Fox,
mm-hmm.
and Tommy was phenomenal in his backup vocals and playing the B3. So now Tommy has officially joined the band because we want to reproduce what we did on the record. We want to reproduce it live. And Tommy lives here in Vegas. And at the time that he joined the band, he really wasn't doing much of anything. So we asked him, like, dude, you want to be a part of this? And so now, you know, there are six of us in the band, and Tommy Paris is the sixth member. And we're having a ball. I'm not kidding you, Eddie. It's some of the most fun I've had in years.
Well, that's what it's about, man. If it's not fun, why bother doing it?
Exactly.
It's got to be. It's got to be fun. It's because it's not easy to. I mean, so many of the bands I talk to and the musicians I talk to for years, they'll say this all the time. And now me going out and doing shows myself, I see exactly what they're talking about. The idea. The hour and a half that you're on a stage having fun is the great part. The 22 and a half other hours that you're traveling or dealing with flight delays or trying to get through security or what have you. I recently had the airline make me open my suitcase and take something out because I was a half a pound over.
Oh, my.
One half pound over.
Yeah.
This is now. I flew 72,000 miles on this airline.
Yeah,
they're called United.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Give it.
There's no advertising on satellite radio, so there you go.
Yeah.
And they made me. I said, "You're kidding." I said, "I've flown 72,000 miles this year, and you're telling me because of a half a pound, I have to take a dirty T-shirt out of my suitcase."
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
And I'm standing there in a line of people, and I had to sit there and open. It was unbelievable. And then, you know, after every time you fly, you get the flight survey. Like, how's your flight experience? You should have seen when I filled that one out.
Yeah, exactly. Good. You know, a particular airline lost my luggage, and only my luggage, not the rest of the band, but only my luggage, four times last year. The same airline lost just my piece of luggage four times. I think they were called U.S. Airways.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
And they probably charged you extra to put it on. $25 a bag or some bullshit. It's crazy.
You're right. But you know what? The point that you were making is really true, man. When you're out on the stage, that's when it makes everything worthwhile.
It feels
so good, and getting that audience response and feeding off of it and getting a good crowd and just building it. There's no feeling like that. And so all of the hours of the flying and all of the hours of the rehearsing and all of the hours of dealing with the airports and the hotels and all of that kind of stuff, it's a real pain in the butt, but man, there is a high like no other when you're on that stage and all cylinders are hitting just right. It just, there's no feeling like that. It's phenomenal.
Hey, you mentioned your dad was a musician. Yeah. What did he play? What was his background?
My father was Southern gospel and black gospel music, and out of Detroit. And he was any type of keyboard, yes. Guitar, yes. Writer, arranger, from anything to small bands to full, you know, orchestra arrangements, vocal arrangements. Worked with some phenomenal people, folks like Mahalia Jackson, folks like Johnny Cash.
Wow.
You know, dad worked with some very big people in his life and in his career, and you know, when I look back as a kid growing up, I remember meeting some very cool and some very, very interesting people growing up that you know really made impressions on me. Like right now, a name that just totally just popped into my head out of nowhere was, you know, Mylon Lefevre, Atlanta Rhythm Section. You know, I remember meeting him, you know, as a kid. The Lefevre family was, you know, friends of the family back then, and you know, Johnny Cash was, you know, larger than life, you know, meeting him as a young man.
Sure.
It's like, you know, you're kidding me. But you know, dad was quite the musician, and really, really strong, and it's just you know, he was also, you know, like my senior business partner and my best friend. And you know, in 08, when you know the Lord called him home, I really kind of lost my mind there for a little bit, which is part of the reason why I got busy. I had to occupy myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, built the club. That's why I built the tattoo shop. That's why I built the recording studio. I figured, man, I'm gonna get myself so busy right now that I don't have time to think about that.
Right.
So, you know, dad always influenced me when he was here, and he still influences me to this day. It's amazing, as years go by, you realize just how brilliant your parents really were the whole time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, I have on stage on a regular basis, I have what I call a dad moment, where I'm singing and all of a sudden I feel it, and I'm with him for a little bit. And so that's another reason why I love to get out on that stage and rock, because I can get close to dad.
Yeah, well, listen, it's where you come from, man. I'll tell you, I can't tell you how many times. I mean, I have two kids, 7 and 11, and I'm home and I'm following them around the house, and I'm yelling at them about whatever they're doing wrong, and in a nice way, of course. But I mean, it's all, and I stop for a beat because I'm like, oh my God, I'm my mother. Fortunately, both of my parents are still here, and
amen.
And it's crazy though. It's like I remember my mom would just constantly, when I lived home, yell at me about turning lights off, that I would leave lights on around the house.
Yeah.
And now I can't tell you 15 times a day I'm yelling at my kids to turn the lights off.
Turn the lights off. Close the fridge.
I'm like, how did this happen? Like, what? But it's all just cyclical, man. We come from where we come from.
Yeah, it's exactly right, man. It's the truth, man. You know, parenting. I'm not a parent. We have no children, and that was by choice. I just thought, you know, the life that I live, the lifestyle that I live, I fear that if I had kids, they would be running rampant in the streets, committing crimes. So I just made a conscious decision to not do that to the world. But you know what you're doing, man, raising your children properly, oh my Lord, it's phenomenal, because there's so many people out there that just aren't doing that.
Well, it's a lot, man. I'll tell you, it's a lot of work, but I give a lot of the credit too. I mean, first of all, my parents were, I was lucky because, listen, I've been in the music industry 32 years, and yeah. I never did drugs, and I never fell into any of the classic traps and vices.
Yep.
Contrary to what it might look like the first time I came to your club. But I mean,
that was just having fun.
That was just having fun and drinking too much. But I mean, I rarely even drink normally. But I tell all my friends when I come to Vegas, I said, "Trust me, I'm really not like this, except for when I get to this town," and that's the truth.
Yeah.
But it's funny. It's, you know, you have to find a way to make it all work. And I could never have envisioned myself having kids for the longest time because I am very unconventional. I don't work a 9-to-5 by design. I'm very happy I don't. I like working off hours. I like working for myself. I like finding my own sort of things to go after and chase and build and all that. So the hours are long. They're unconventional. It's not going to be a thing where Monday to Friday at 5 o'clock, dad's at the table having dinner. But I tell people all the time, I'm like, okay, I might not be around Friday night or Monday night, but guess what? I'm around Tuesday and Wednesday to get them off the bus to be there when most dads aren't. So it all does balance out. And unfortunately, my wife, you know, she knew what I did long before we had kids and before, you know, when we met, and she knew that it was going to be a different sort of thing. So she's cool with it, and she anchors the home front, and she's like, "No, you go do your thing," and I get it, and there's never any drama. And that's a huge thing.
That's a blessing.
To be able to have somebody that gets it, you don't have to call 15 times a day and says, "Go do what you got to do, and I know what you do, and make it work," is amazing. So that's a big plus to have that anchored at home.
Absolutely, man. It's a huge blessing. And see, like, you know, when I was growing up as a kid, you know, dad was on the road a lot. And so mom was that anchor, you know?
Yeah.
And like you're talking about, his hours were completely unconventional. He was on the road constantly. But it was a magnificent relationship when he was home, because, you know, when he's home, he's home. You know, it's not like he's having to punch a time card or, you know, and not there. You know, he's there as much as possible. And then as I got older, fortunately, you know, I started singing gospel music. That's where I got my start, was singing in the church and singing gospel. And so as I got older, I actually was included in the music that my father was doing, and I had the opportunity to literally travel the world and sing, and I got to see places at a young age that today I'll never be able to go back to them again, because of this. There's so much unrest in the world in certain places anymore that, you know, you can't go there as an American. You're just a target.
Right.
So, but I got to see them at a young, you know, a young man's age, and I'm so thankful for that. And that's because of what he did. It wasn't anything that I did. It was an opportunity that he laid on the table for me. So, you know, I'm eternally grateful. And you know, someday I'll get to see him again, and we're going to laugh about all this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, listen, man, before I let you go, give everybody then the recap. The new season of Counting Cars is coming soon.
New season of Counting Cars. Season 5 is hitting on history February 24, Tuesday. Check that out. You're going to love it. And they're supersized seasons, man, because we've had some short seasons. We got some supersized seasons, and we're going right into season 6 after that. So Counting Cars is coming your way. Tuesday nights on history, February 24 is season 5 hits. The record for Count 77, it's available iTunes, Amazon, and if there are any record stores still living somewhere in this world.
They are, and people support them if they got them by.
Amen.
You, man, because I grew up working in one, and I still love my CDs. And if anybody listening anywhere in this country, there's a record store near you, please go support them, man.
Exactly.
You guys have
exactly
one in Vegas, Zia,
yeah,
don't you have Zia?
Zia Records, as a matter of fact. We did our CD release bash, started at Zia Records, and then it ended up back down at Vamped, you know, for a show. But yes, support your local record store. And so yes, the record Count 77, check it out. It's if you like 70s, if you like the harder side of 70s rock, check out the record. I promise you will not be disappointed. And then we're going into the studio here for our second record coming up. And check out, get on the website. There's count77.com. And we're also on Facebook, Count 77. It's COUNTS, Count 77. And check out the dates, man, because we're right now, the dates are getting all put in place for the 2015 tour, we're going to be all over. We're like a bad rash, bro. We're everywhere. We're all over the place. And so I encourage you to come out and just come out and party, man. When we start a show, we start off and we tell everybody, tonight it's 1977 in this house tonight. So let's all party like it's 1977. And we go crazy.
Nothing wrong with that. What a great year that was for some nice great records and so much great music, man.
Absolutely. It was a very influential year on all of us in the band, and so that's kind of why we picked the name like that.
I saw my first ever concert in 1977, which was Kiss at the Garden, December 16th.
Phenomenal, man. There's a show for you, right?
77, a Live 2 tour, and a band called Piper opened up, which was Billy Squire's first band.
Unbelievable.
And
really?
I still have the ticket stub.
Now let me ask you a question.
What?
Who, besides Count 77, okay, that's my last plug on that. Besides Count 77, who should we be looking for out there right now? Who is new right now that Eddie Trunk is going to say, you know what, you guys should look at this.
A new band?
Yeah.
Okay, I got one for you. It ties in exactly with what we are talking about right now as far as the 70s, just blazing guitar, kick-ass sort of rock band.
Yes.
There's a band, their record comes out next week, that's called Motor Sister.
Motor Sister.
Yes, and there's a more of a story to it, but there's people in the band you would certainly know. Scott Ian from Anthrax is in the band.
Yeah.
Joey Vera from Armored Saint is in the band.
Nice.
John Tempesta, who plays drums in The Cult, is in the band.
Oh, man.
Scott Ian's wife sings backing vocals, Pearl. And the band is built around this guy named Jim Wilson.
Uh-huh.
And the story in a nutshell is this. Jim Wilson had a band called Mother Superior, one of those bands that put out some records that never made it. And Scott Ian was a huge fan, and he felt they should have.
Yeah.
So for Scott's 50th birthday party, he hired this band to play his party. And he jammed with them. And it went so well, he said, you know, this is crazy. It's criminal, these songs, and people don't know them. So he built a band around the main guy in Mother Superior, rebranded it Motor Sister, and redid those songs, which nobody ever heard to begin with. And it is just slamming.
I've got to check that out, man.
And it's totally, you know what? I'm going to text you.
Yeah.
I just got a box of CDs from them. I'm going to text you when I get off the air and get your address.
Yeah.
And I'm going to send you one out.
Thank you, my brother.
Because you will love this, Danny. It's exactly in the wheelhouse of what we're talking about and what you're doing as well.
That's what I love, man. And you know, we're trying to bring that back. We're really making it a point to capture that vibe of those bands back in the day and deliver it again in a fresh new way. So, you know, we're trying to start this revival. It's great to hear that there's groups like Motor Sister out there doing the same thing, man. So, you know, we're keeping the faith.
And another one I'd give you would be Rival Sons. They're starting to actually do really well.
Now, who's in Rival Sons?
Nobody you would know. It's not that sort of thing. It's a newer band, but they got about 3-4 records out there, an L.A. band, and they're really doing well in England, and they're starting to really do well here also. But they are a band that definitely one to watch and definitely emerging. They're, you know, that's not like a storyline like what I just gave you. That's just a band that's been pushing, and they're really getting someplace, and I definitely would check them out. Their newest album is called Great Western Valkyrie. If I have that, I'll throw you out some stuff to check out, because I know exactly what you're talking about, and you would definitely be into this stuff.
You rock, man. That's what I'm hungry for, and that's why we go out and do it, you know, because that's what we love, and there's an audience for that, man. There's a huge audience for that.
Yeah.
People wanting what I consider, you know, the real rock and roll from the day.
No nonsense. Straight up guitars, bass, drums. That's what it's about. That's
absolutely
what I've always loved the most. So
melt your face, shred and guitars. that's the way to do it.
Danny, I'm so happy for all your success, man, really.
Eddie, right back at you, man. Congratulations on everything with that metal show and everything. And dude, give your co-host my love. I love those cats. They're absolutely phenomenal dudes. And I can't wait to see you, man.
Yeah. We premiere February 21st, so we're like bookends there with new shows. So that's
awesome.
Beautiful.
Awesome. Congratulations on that. I'll be watching, man. You rock, brother.
Hey, man, send my best to your wife. I hope to see you guys soon.
Thank you, man. Eddie, you're always home here.
Thank you, man.
Love you.
Take care. You too.
All right, brother.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.